Good morning. Last night we began Slichos, so officially the Yomim Noraim season has begun. So, I'd like to just go through some inyanim of inyanei Rosh Hashanah. That are in general pertinent to women specifically. Okay. There is a minhag that we have that on Erev Rosh Hashanah we do Hataras Nedarim. In other words, somebody makes a neder and he regrets the neder. Or if he would have known something, he wants to undo the neder. So there's a concept of hataras nedarim, that you go in front of three people, and they can matter the neder, either through a harata, that you regret that you did it, or if you would have known at the time that some certain things would have, you wouldn't have taken such a neder. So that's the minhag. Nedarim is became a very big part of the Yom Noraim season. You know, Kol Nidre. That's all about Nedarim. So, men generally have a minhag that in shul on Erev Rosh Hashanah after davening, they get together three men and then they say a certain, the nusach that's written in the siddur, and they say, mutalach, mutalach, mutalach. So that's normally done on Erev Rosh Hashanah. And women don't necessarily come to shul on Erev Rosh Hashanah and don't necessarily have the same minhag. However, if you look at number two, it says, Habal Nasa Shliach Lishal Nidre Ishto. That a husband could be a Shliach to ask the three men to matir the neder. Because even though, if you look in number three, at the bottom, it says, Sarach Hanoda Lavol of Ne Matirim. Normally, the halacha is you have to go yourself. You can't appoint a Shliach. In Osa Shliach. However, it says here, number two, by the Taz, Habal Nasa Shliach Atam Ishto Kegufo, that the concept of Ishto Kegufo, it lets the wife appoint the husband to be a Shliach, to be Matir, the Neder. Right. So, we'll talk in a second. A Neder really means that you verbally said you're going either Shua says you're verbally going to do something, or you verbally say this particular thing is going to be forbidden to you, or somebody does something that's meritorious. He's keeping a certain chumrah, he's keeping chadash, yoshan, and now for some reason he wants to not keep it anymore. Minag tov. So the concept of this whole Hataras Nedarim that we do on Erev Rosh Hashanah, the poskim point out, is if you don't really know that you did a particular neder, you say maybe you did it. So to cover it, you have this Hataras Nedarim, or you go to shul called Nidre and as well. But if you know specifically that you took some type of acceptance, you verbally articulated, or you were doing something that you were keeping, Shabbos late, or something like that, a stringency that you were taking upon yourself that for some reason right now maybe you can't continue doing that. So then there's a concept of Hataras Nedarim. So it's a conscious thing that you were planning to do it and continue doing it. You didn't necessarily. In other words, if one says, "I'm not eating this particular food anymore because I need to lose weight," so that's a real articulated shvuah of sorts. But if somebody just was doing something, a practice, a good practice that they were doing, and they kept doing it. And now, for some reason, they can't continue doing it. They were keeping a certain chumrah, a certain stringency that wasn't necessarily required. They say, I'm going to keep Shabbos even later, or I'm going to keep, you know, something that wasn't necessarily required. So you go to in front of three people and you explain them the situation, and they figure out how they could take away the nether. So the concept that we do it on Kol Nidre or on Erev Rosh Hashanah, that's for things that we're not, you know, for things that we maybe not have thought of, that we maybe had some type of nether of sorts. And therefore, so we say, but if we know that we did something, we made a particular nether we have in mind, then we have to say specifically what we want to undo. It says that if we were just afraid that maybe something in the course of the year that is included in this concept of neder, so that's why a lot of times wives tell their husbands that could you tell when you go to shul and Erev Rosh Hashanah, tell these three rabbis that all that you did is also for your wife, and then they'll say mutalach, you know, for her as well. They'll repeat the thing. Right, in other words, certain things you have to do. In other words, not talking about a nether to keep Shabbos. Right, but say you want to say, I want to keep Shabbos even later. I want to keep Shabbos even earlier. I want to light maybe an extra candle. You know, different things that are not strictly requirements that you have accepted upon yourself that maybe you can't continue to do so. Okay, so we'll figure it out. Okay, so that's the concept. That's number four on page two. Lavo al minav tzarech hatara. Okay. Then the next thing here is on the bottom of page three. Hadlakas neiros b'leil Rosh Hashanah. Obviously, Rosh Hashanah is yontif, and the minig is on yontif. Women light candles just like they light on Shabbos. It's interesting that Rosh Hashanah is a yontif, just like Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot, and we light candles. The proper nusach that most of us have is l'hadlik ner shel yontov. If you'll see sometimes in ads in newspapers, they'll say l'hadlik ner shel yom hazikaron. Because the reason they have that is those ads were put by Lubavitch Chabad people, and their minag is that on Rosh Hashanah they don't say Lahadlik Ner Shel Yom Tov, they say Lahadlik Ner Shel Yom HaZikaron. But if you're not from that persuasion, so then you should make the regular bracha of Lahadlik Ner Shel Yom Tov, because that's the normative way of doing of saying the bracha. The Shulchan Aruch says that the question is, when do you make the bracha? Do you make the bracha before you light the candles or after? By Shabbos, so we know the minig is that the women light the candles first and then cover their eyes and then make the bracha, because it became the minag to follow the opinion of the Baal Halachas Gedolos from the earlier rabbinic authorities that say that making the bracha, at lighting the candles, you're accepting Shabbos. So So therefore, if you would make the bracha first, lahadlik ner shel Shabbos, then you couldn't light the candles anymore. That became normative halacha. And therefore we do this thing of lighting the candles first and then covering up. But you see, normally the halacha is you do a mitzvah first, you make the bracha, and then you do the mitzvah. Like, for example, you take lulav, you shake the lulav. So you're supposed to make the bracha first, and then you shake the lulav, right? It's always before. The bracha is always made beforehand. There are certain things that we make, and the Rambam's opinion is that you should always make a bracha beforehand. Always. Bracha, and then the mitzvah. Always. That's the opinion of the Rambam. And the Rambam's opinion is that you can't make a bracha afterwards. It would be a bracha levatala. So we hold that certain mitzvahs, the way we normative, we paskin, that certain things that we make the bracha afterwards. For example, when somebody goes to the mikveh, so they don't make the bracha before the first dunk, because why is that? Why don't they do that? Because it comes from going to the mikveh for conversion. When a person goes to the mikveh for conversion, they're not Jewish yet, so they can't make the bracha first. So since the converts can't, so therefore they made it across the board for everybody. Now, so therefore that's why there's tefillah first, and then the bracha afterwards, and then and then there's tefillahs afterwards as well. But it all comes from the convert. And then another area where the practice is to make the bracha afterwards is by netilas yadayim. That really netilas yadayim, again, it's a brachas hamitzvah. So make the bracha first and then the netilas yadayim. But since sometimes the hands are not clean, and therefore we make the netilah first, then the bracha, and then it's still considered before because we make the bracha before we dry the hands. Before we dry the hands. So that's what we do on Shabbos. On every Shabbos, the women, they make the, you know better than I do, you light and cover the eyes, make the bracha, and what's the idea? Because what's the covering of the eyes? Because we still want it to be before something. So we make it before you're getting benefit from the light, so therefore you cover your eyes, and therefore it's still considered somewhat before, even though technically the Rambam's opinion is no, you should make the bracha first, because the Rambam's opinion is that you're not accepting Shabbos with the bracha or the neiros. So therefore, if you're not accepting Shabbos with that, then you should follow the regular rules. But we don't follow that way. We assume you are accepting Shabbos. So therefore, life first, and then the bracha. So the question that comes about, and I'll take your question in one second. The question comes about is, what about on Yontif? What about on Yontif? Because on Yontif, you could light even what? After the chag, right? You can't make a new fire, but you can make it, afterwards. So there is a discussion. If you look here on page 4 in the Magen Avraham, the second line says Besof Sefer Hadrisha B'Shem Imo. In other words, the Drisha was one of the big rabbinic authorities. He quotes his mother, and his mother said she made a halacha, a woman's halacha. She said she thinks that on Yontif, you should make the bracha first, and then light the candles. Because since on Yontif, we're allowed to light a candle if it's pre-existing fire. You can't make a new fire, but a pre-existing one you can. So then, she said, this woman, the mother of this rabbi, and it's quoted in the Svarim, that in Yontif you should make the bracha first, like the normal way. First you make the bracha, and then you do the mitzvah. So how many of you do that? Yeah, some people do that on Yontif. Yeah. So some people do that, and others say that Moged Avraham, he didn't like that. He said the woman should not give a halachic opinion. Ein chachma leisha. It's v'chule. Ella bepelech. Only in the sewing area. That was the, So he said that even though she might be right, but the concept is lo chilku chachamim. That since in Shabbos it doesn't work, so therefore, a lot of times when the Chachamim make a way of doing something, they don't want it to make it with so many variables because people will just get confused. So they say, this is the way you should do it all the time. And because you have to be somewhat a Talmud Chacham to know Yom Tov is different. Shah, you gotta, not everyone is like that. So some people don't make that distinction, and then Yom Tov also, they make the, they light, and then they do the same thing that they do on Shabbos. But those that follow the mother of the Drisha do it that way. So I guess different women here have different practices. So whatever your practice is, so that's what you should do. You mean, in other words, yeah, so what do you do on Shabbos? You, right. You didn't make the bracha. Yeah, in other words, So, So you're assuming that. Okay. Yeah, okay, so. Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, right. That could be a question. Right. Okay. Let's go to number three. Achilas and Simonim. So there is a Gemara in Croesus, on number three, page four, that people have different types of Simonim. Like the head of a lamb or a head of a this or that, and it signifies different things, and we want hopefully that she was on of we eat the head of a fish, a head of this, or different things that we some people have this. Rabbi Goldwicht here in the Washington Heights, he's very makpid to have all the simanim. In fact, when I was single, he told me that I should come eat by him the first night of Rosh Hashanah, and you'll become a chassan that year, and that's what happened. So, so, okay, then there's also a practice that we take an apple, and we dip it in honey, right? A tapuach, that's over here, lechol tapuach. So many poskim assume that, in other words, people have this, a lot of times they have it after they make hamotzi. They have the tapuach and bedvash. So the minig is to many people that make a bor priya eitz on the apple, because it's not really part of the meal. And then they're supposed to say this thing of Yehi Ratzon, Shetchadesh Aleinu Shana Tovo Mesuka. So the question is, when do you say the Yehi Ratzon? So we say it before the Bori Priya Eitz, because if you're going to say it after the Bori Priya Eitz, it's going to be a hefsek. Normally, the klal is, whenever you make a bracha, say on food, you have to eat the food right away. If you talk between the eating, between the bracha and the consumption of the food, then you lose out on the bracha. So that's why it's very important. This happens very often at Shabbos tables, that right before you're making the motzia, this, everyone's involved in some conversation, and you can't wait to continue the conversation. So as soon as it makes a motzi and you put it in your chal in your mouth, you're back to the conversation. So the halacha is, no, you're supposed to swallow. And then you could continue the conversation. Swallow, preferably eat a nice kazayas, and then, but if you really have to talk, so once you swallow, you could... Right, that's a separate issue. If there are poskim that say that if you were lax and you started talking, as long as you started chewing already, you didn't lose the bracha. But you shouldn't do that l'chatchila. L'chatchila, you should make sure to swallow, and then you could get back to the conversation. So in the Magen Avraham here on the bottom of page 4, it says, "V'omrim mashmash ochel tchila." In other words, some have the practice that you say the hiratzon shetachadei shaloina shonotov b'zuka when you finish eating, shalo hafsik. And others say mitzkosav shetchila v'chakach ochel. And some even did it between the bracha and the eating, but that I don't recommend you do, because just like we do it by the sukkah, right? We make a bracha and then we make leisher b'sukkah and then we eat. So we make a leisher basuk in between because it has to do with the, it's not considered a hefsik, but this is not the same as, so I would recommend either you say it beforehand, you say it before, you say the whole bracha, that's what we do, the hiratzon, and then you make the boy pre-eats, and then you eat the, everyone has it already dipped into the honey, and you make the hiratzon, and the boy pre-eats, and then you eat it. And then you don't talk until you finish, swallowing the first piece of the apple. Now, number 4, page 5, is the pre-chadash thing. The pre-chadash thing is a question whether you're supposed to make shechiyanu the second night of Rosh Hashanah. We know all yomim tovim, we make a shechiyanu when we make. I mean, women a lot of times make it by hadlakas neros. We make it the first night of Yontif, the second night of Yontif. Right, one time people make big mistakes is on the seventh day of Pesach, because the seventh day of Pesach is the only Yontif that we don't make a Shechiyanu, because it's not new; it's the continuation of the Yontif. See, the first days of Pesach, the first day of Pesach, the second day of Pesach, they're Shechiyanu. Same thing by Sukkot. First day, and Sukkot, the end of Sukkot, we also make a Shechiyanu, because it's a new holiday, Shmini Atzeres. So we make it by Shmini Atzeres, and what we call Simchas Torah, we make another Shechiyanu at night. But the only time in the whole calendar of Yom Tovim that we don't make the Shechiyanu is the last days of Pesach. Because the last days of Pesach is not a new holiday, it's a continuation. It's not like Sukkot, where the last day of Sukkot is a new holiday of Shemini Atzeres. So a lot of times people make that mistake. And they make a Shechiyanu, because they're normally, all Yontif, you always make a Shechiyanu. So that's something to keep in mind from 6 months from now, when we get to Pesach, not to make... Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach has a tshuva. He says, if you made the mistake and you made the bracha of Shechiyanu when you weren't supposed to, so it's not considered a hefsik. Because you could say that you made Shechiyanu and when it wasn't supposed to, so then you were mafsik. So he says, as long as you thought you were supposed to make it, even though it's a bracha levatala, you made a mistake. Okay, it's a bracha levatala b'shogeg, but you didn't lose out on the bracha. But that's something to remember for that. Now, you wanted to say something? Yeah. Okay. Now the pre-chadash thing. So there's a question that Rosh Hashanah maybe is different, because Rosh Hashanah is a discussion whether the 2 days are considered Yom Arichta, one long day, or not. It's a whole complex sugya in the Gemara. But so there are opinions that say that maybe you shouldn't make a Shechiyanu the second day of Rosh Hashanah. And there are opinions say that you do. So strictly speaking, the halacha is you do. It's like any other yantif. It's like that you make a second. But since there is an opinion that says not to, we try to what? To have something new for the second day of, second night of Rosh Hashanah. A new fruit, a new garment. So the question is like this, a new garment, so you're really happy about. So it warrants a Shekhiyanu. But to tell you the truth, the new fruits that usually come to the table, and like Rav Abadi mentioned, you have to have simcha. There's not so much simcha with these new fruits. So it's good that really the Iker Halacha is that you make it anyway, because if we really need to make it on these new fruits, as Rav Abadi pointed out, it would be a serious question whether these fruits warrant, you can barely eat some of these new fruits. And parenthetically, let me mention, people, this is a mistake that a childhood mistake. We were probably all taught this in when we were growing up, that a new fruit means, well, did I eat it within the year? But the post can point out that it has nothing to do whether you ate it during the year. It has to do whether it was out of season and now it came back to season. That's why the Satmar Rebbe was of the opinion that today that we import and export things, so a lot of fruits could be available the whole year round, even when they're not, and therefore he thought that maybe you should never make a Shekhiyanu on a new fruit because maybe they're all accessible. But in terms of Rosh Hashanah, if you have a new piece of clothing, so that's something that people are happy about. So that's the real thing. But technically speaking, if you don't have the new clothing and you're just relying on the new fruit, so people have this new fruit. I'm not telling you shouldn't get the new fruits because everyone gets it, so you might as well get it. And new piece of jewelry. That doesn't have to do with you. It doesn't have to do with you. It has to do with
being available.
Right. That's what it has to do with it. Candles. Yeah. So people. Yeah. I mean, you try to have something new, close in close proximity to that. Okay. Then, number five, there are certain things that there's a minhag not to eat. Yesh medaktikim shelo lochel agozim. Right? There's a minhag not to have nuts on Rosh Hashanah, because egos bigmatria chet, if you don't count the aleph. So that's one thing. And then, if you look at number two, meaning there's an idea not to have sour things, sharp things. Some people, like Rav Hoffman pointed out, some people have a minhag not to have chrein on Rosh Hashanah, because these, the idea is to have sweet things, to Bez Hashem, to have a sweet year, and not to have the sharp things. Okay, so different people have different minhagim of how far they go with that. Okay, number six, tkiya shofar. So the first thing you have to know is, we'll talk about that later, about tkiya shofar. Tkiya shofar is a mitzvah. Look for a second on page six, number seven. The Shulchan Aruch says, isha p'tura. You have to realize that women are not obligated in tekiah shofar, because it's a time-bound mitzvah. Now, if you tell that to a woman, she would think, that's... But women like to do tekiah shofar. So that's like, it's part of the whole psyche of having a good year. And, so, okay, by all means, come to shul and hear shofar. But technically speaking, a woman is not obligated, but they have accepted upon themselves. That's like what we said before, look at number two, minag. That's a minag tov. you know, the women have a minik tov to do it, so they accept it upon themselves, but it's not like the same obligation that a man has. A man has an obligation of tkiya shofar in the Torah. A woman, this is a mitzvah that's Mitzvah Esei Shazman Grama. It's a classic Mitzvah Esei Shazman Grama, and therefore women are absolved from Tkiyah Shofar, but yet they have a minhag, so what we said before, a minhag tov to do it, so they should do it, because now they're bound to do it, because, according to some opinions, because whenever you have a minhag tov, like we said before, that's like a neder. It's like they accept it upon themselves. That we, like someone mentioned before, I don't need a neder to keep Shabbos, because I have to keep Shabbos, but Tkiyah Shofar, a woman doesn't have to do Tkiyah Shofar, because she's not bound by that, just like she's not, all the big mitzvahs in the month of Tishrei are women, mitzvahs that women are not chayiv in, like Sukkah and Lulav and Shofar and all these things, but they, especially shofar, that's, I would say that's the top of the list of the mitzvahs that women, you know, want to be part of. So by all means, let them come and be part of and listen to the shofar. There is a discussion whether you're allowed to eat before shofar. You know, in the yeshivas, you know, davening is long. In many shuls, davening is long. You know, like it's a long thing, the davening. So if you're going to tell somebody they can first eat when they come home, it's not easy. So therefore, it became a practice in the yeshivas, especially yeshivas and the davening, 10, 2, 3, 4, whatever. So they have a little break before blowing of the shofar, and they make kiddush, and they have some cake, and they go back, and that became the practice of making kiddush before. In some shuls, they do it. Also, the late Rav Henkin, he was the posek in America before Rav Moshe Feinstein. He also lived on the Lower East Side, and he was the posek. So that was one of his things that he was very upset about, that he felt it was not right to eat and make kiddush before shofar. In fact, Rav Henkin said the preferable way to do it is to hear the shofar, the 30 kolos, and then make kiddush after. That was his big thing. So that's what he felt, that people who, you know, are not so strong, who want to, so after they had 30 kolos, let them go into another room, make kiddush and that. But that's, most people don't follow his opinion. But he was very strong about, there were two things they say that Rav Henkin was very strong about. He was strong about not eating before shofar, and then he was strong about if a couple had a civil marriage, but not a halachic marriage, that they still need a get. And Rav Moshe Feinstein was also would like to have the al-katrila, but if they didn't, he was more makel on that. But those are his two crusades, that civil marriages also require a get if they break up, and not to eat before shofar. So. Right, so Rav Henkin always said the following. He said, the fact that they announce in shul you're not allowed to talk till the end of the 100 kolos, that's just a stringency. Because the halacha really is that once you made the bracha and you started the mitzvah, now you're good. So even if you talk in the middle, so just like when we make a motzi at a meal, right? So we make the motzi, we eat, and then we talk. We don't, we're going to eat again, but we talk during the meal, even though we're going to eat again, because once the bracha was chal on something, it was chal. So by a mitzvah, l'chatchila, we try that not to talk to the whole way till we finish the whole thing. So he says that's really a stringency, but the fact of eating before is more... So, b'kitzer, if a person could... you know, hold, not have to eat. So then, not. But those that need to make kiddush, they can make kiddush. And then the question whether you know which shita you should follow. So is what to say for either shita. Either you want to make it before the shofar, and women, their obligation, as we said, is much less because they don't really have that obligation. So, you know, so the fact that they would want to make kiddush, and that would be much less of an issue than for a man to who has a real obligation. Page number seven. We all grew up with this idea, no sleeping on Rosh Hashanah. No sleeping on Rosh Hashanah. And that's quoted in the Ramah, Gam Nogim Shalolishan Biyom Rosh Hashanah. Minag Nochanu. And if you look in the Taz, it says here, Kol Yishin Di Isu, B'Yushalmi Man De Domech Reisharta Domech Mazli. That somebody who will sleep on Rosh Hashanah, he'll have a sleepy mazel. So it's not considered a... So if you look in the Magen Avraham over here, he says that the Arizal says Achar Chatzos Mutar Lishon, that after midday, which is around 1 o'clock, is shul. I mean, you're all going to be already back. You know, by the time we come home from shul, and any come out every shul, it's going to be after Chatzos. So he says after Chatzos, you can really go to sleep. And he says Hayoshev Votel Ki Yoshen Domi, as if a person is not saying, doing something productive, meaning a mitzvah, something like that, he's just idle chatter or something like that, then you can might as well go to take a nap. You might as well take a nap. If you want to say, you want to say kill him the whole day or something like that, you want to go to the hospital and visit somebody, I say, okay, so then I can understand, don't sleep, do these things. But if anyway, you're just sitting idle or something that's, you know, not so the best. So then you could go to sleep if it's later in the afternoon. Number nine, the minig shel tashlich. There is a minig to go to tashlich. A minig that you say certain psukim from Sefer Micha to go to the nohar to say tashlich. It comes from the Medrash. The Medrash says that when, and this is this, there are books of this. I spoke last Monday night in Stern College. I gave like a whole shiur just about Tashlich. I was deciding whether I was going to give that shiur here or in Stern College. So I gave that there. Here I decided I would give the general, and Tashlich would just be one part of it. You want to hear it online, you could hear the whole lengthy shiur just on, I'll give you some highlights now, but if you want to hear the whole thing, you can listen online from the shiur last Monday night in Stern College. But the Medrash says that Avraham Avinu, when he went to the Akedah, so there was a miraculous river put in front of him to stop him from going. The Satan, right. The Satan put this river there miraculously to stop him from going, and he still persevered and went. It was to try to scare him off, and to remember that the Siris Nefesh of Avraham Avinu, that he didn't say, oh, he's kept going, to remind us of the Akedah. It's all to remind us of the Akedah. And I thought the idea, the Musar Haskel, is the following. I think this is what I said over here, and I think it's a very important idea in life. It's the first Al-Chait. Of all the Al-Chaits, what's the first Al-Chait? Al-Chait Shechatanu Lefanecha, the Ones Uveratzon. In other words, the Chait that we, for Ones, something that was beyond our control, and Ratzon, something we did willingly. So the question that everyone asks is, why do we need an Al-Chait for Ones? Ones, it was beyond our capabilities. So why is that? So the Chasam Sofer says, sometimes in life, people are happy or wanting to have an onus. In other words, there's something that they were supposed to do, and they really want to get out of it. So if I have a good excuse, you know, it's snowing, it's this, it's that, you know, so I could say, I didn't want to go anyway. I wouldn't want to do this thing anyway. It's something that maybe you should do, whatever, go to this function or that, but I'm looking for an excuse, so, it's snowing, it's raining, I have my excuse, it's all good. So that you clap chait for wanting to have an excuse. for wanting to have an opinion. Why didn't you call this guy? Why didn't you read the shit up? Why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do that? A million things. In life, there will always be excuses. Because life has so many variables and so many things, so there can always be an excuse not to do something. So sometimes we have to have an al-chait for what? That we were happy that the excuse came, or we wanted the excuse to come. So you see, by Avram Avinu, he, who wants to go into the Akedah, but he had a great excuse. He was going there, and there was a river in the middle. So he'll tell the Ribbono Shel Olam, I had to stop. Because, and one of the Sfarim writes also, that's why, what does it say by the Akedah? Vayivaka Atzei Olam. He took with him the wood. Why did he take the wood with him? That's a big schlep. He had to go a journey of 2 days, three days, he's schlepping the wood. Why didn't he go to the site of where the Akedah is? Then he'll get some wood. Because he was afraid, one of the Sfarim writes, that he'll get to the site of the Akedah, there won't be wood, and then he won't be able to do it. So that would have been a great excuse. But he wasn't looking for excuses. That's the whole point of Avraham Avinu. He wasn't looking for excuses. So therefore, even though there's this the river in between, and even though he could have said, I'm going to wait to see what the wood situation is there, and then maybe, you know, there won't be wood there, and that'll be a great excuse. I'll tell the Ribbono Shel Olam, I tried. But, you know, like Rav Meir Sheinberg said over on the Brisker Rav, said in Yiddish, those that speak Yiddish, Zach nisht, ich ken nisht, Zach ich will nisht. Don't say, I can't do it, say I don't want to do it. Because in life, as Rav Meir Sheinberg said from the Brisker Rav, a lot of things that you... Exactly. Okay, so you know the Aruch HaShulchan has this whole tirade of not socializing too much at Tashlich. It's not meant for as a social event. The Magen Avraham says you should go to a place that there's fish. In other words, and in the Sefer Paradis Eliezer says, because fish, what do fish represent? The Yidgul Arov Bekerif Haaretz. So the Gemara says that fish is the antithesis of the Ayin Hara, because fish are covered over by the water. And the idea being that an Ayin Hara is whenever somebody does something and flaunts it. So then there could be a sakana of an Ayin Hara. So you never want to have, you want to keep low key. Not, Rav Yosef Rabinowitz Atal, the brother-in-law of Rabbi Eli Shulman, once said, you flaunt something, you have, so that creates the Ayin Hara. I remember one of my Talmidim, his wife gave birth to twin girls, and they're very cute girls. And he wanted to know whether he can enter in a contest, and then they put the picture on the front page of some magazine. I said, no way. You shouldn't have nothing to do with such a thing like that. You don't want your little daughters to be on the front page of a newspaper like that. Because it only creates one thing, it's Ayin Hara. And you don't need that. So I told him, don't have anything to do with such a thing. In other words, because the way society is today, especially with the, everything is, flaunting and, there is an idea of, having some, the Mukacher Rebbe says in this week's Parsha, Hanistoros Lashem Elokeinu Vaniglos Lanu Bavaneinu Ad Olam, that if you're going to do things, good things, and you're always going to keep it hidden, no one's going to be able to learn from it. So you have to have some measure of, but it has to be in its measure, because if you flaunt it too much, then there's the sakon of Ayin Hara. So that's the fish. The fish are the Yidgul Arov Karavars, the fish are covered over by the water. And that's the protection of the Ayin Hara. Now a lot of times, one second, people can't go to Tashlich and Rosh Hashanah. So it's brought down to the poskim. Some go during Slichas to before Yom Kippur, when you say the Yugimul Midas Harachamim, that Thursday before, or basically the poskim say you can go, through Sukkos, from Sinasef, from Mordechai Navona till Hoshana Rabbah, you could go and say Slichas. So if you didn't say it in Rosh Hashanah, you have the Aser Simei Tshuva to say it, you have Chol HaMoed Sukkos to say it, you have time. No, Tashlich. Yeah, okay, so the bread, so that's what I started this year in Stern College. The bread is it was an old practice because people had this I don't know, some like the notion that they, you know, they're throwing away their sins. Like, if it would be so easy to throw away your sins, that taking bread and throw it in the, you know, so. But the poskim, as Rav Shach always points out, that they frown upon the throwing of the bread, because you're not supposed to feed things that are not under your jurisdiction. So we don't. It's brought down in the Mariel. It's an early source that some had that, but it's the poskim frown upon the throwing of the bread. So you guys come and you say the psukim, and you go home, and that's it. Okay. The last thing that we should always keep in mind, it's not necessarily a Rosh Hashanah thing, but that is that, you know, we talk about all these mitzvahs that people want to do, shofar, lulav, sukkah, that they're really not chayivin. But one thing that women are chayivin is davening, tefillah. They're chayiv to daven every day. Some poskim hold three times a day or two times a day, but that's something that is, the Gemara says, even though you would think that tefillah is time-bound, it's mitzvah sheshes esrei grama, but since it's rachamim, the Gemara says, it's something that we're asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu mercy, so that trumps the whole concept of mitzvah sesei shazman grama. So that's something that we should, try to be nizar, and Rabbi points out to daven three times a day sometimes, you know, maybe a question, but to daven, you know, the regular Shmon Esrei, that's something that the simple pshat in halacha is that women are obligated. There are some poskim that said that it's enough that they say some tchina in the morning or something like that, but so there is an opinion like that, but the simple pshat of Rav Soloveitchik point out that the women really have a chiyuv of tefillah, and Rosh Hashanah is the beginning of the new year of, you know, we spend a lot of time with tefillah. So the tefillah, specifically Shmon Esrei, so that's an important thing. And that's something that there's a real obligation. In other words, again, we saw shofar and sukkah and lulav. The women want to do it, so gesundheit, they can do it. But tefillah is something that's something they should always try to do every day. Yes. Okay. Yeah, we can finish. No, the new fruit is the second night of Rosh Hashanah. Yeah. No. That's the name of the simen. It's Tav Kuf is 583. Is Tav Kuf? That's the number of in the Shulchan Aruch. They're chapter numbers. Okay. Okay. Okay, every situation you have to see, you know, I can't make I don't want to make a general, you know, statement, but I'm just telling you a story that I gave advice to a student of mine that I didn't think it was such a good idea to have his newborn babies on the front of some newspaper. Okay. In other words, the musr of the fish are teaching us the idea of keeping a low profile. Because, meaning on the time of Rosh Hashanah, that we're starting the new year, we're setting the tone for the way we're acting. And that's the idea. Usually you do it at the beginning. That's how usually it's done. If you want to do it differently, it's not the end of the world. You know, you have to move around the meal. So, yeah. It's not like you know, I said davening you're obligated to do. Saying tashlich, if you get a chance to say tashlich, you know, here you can go to the river here, you know, you can right. No. If you took a neder, you verbalized the neder, then you can't say b'li neder. But if you're just doing something, in other words, if you're sending something that's not technically a neder, you say b'li neder, it's not a neder. You're just saying I'm going to do something, but it's not really a neder. No, the neder also has to have certain. In other words, like I said, I'll call you tomorrow b'li neder. So if you don't say, I'm going to call you tomorrow, so it's not a neder, because it's not really in the lashon of No, if it's something a neder, then you're saying, believe that it makes no sense. Yeah. Well, it's already brought down in the early, and the Ramah brings it down, so it's already in the Shulchan Aruch, so it's already Yeah, I was talking about you know, the time of when the Shulchan Aruch was written, so it was already brought down in the. No, that was later. Right, yeah. So it was around, yeah. The 100 kolos is based on the Medrash that Aim Sisra. Yeah, the Tosa says in Rosh Hashanah that that Sisra went to battle. Yeah, so it says that his mother was waiting for him coming back from the battle, and she cried 100 times. Yeah, so that became the practice. Even though, really, you only have to blow 9 kolos, and then the 9 became 30, and the 30 became, and it grew and grew. And to what it is today, that, you know. But even a woman, you know, it's enough if she hears 30 kolos. That would be a good thing. If she can't stay, if she can stay in shul the whole time, you know, kol hakavod. But if not, what? Yeah, okay. Yeah, okay. Yeah. You want to do it? If halavai, it should help. Halavai, it should help. We all, yeah. Some have the practice to say, some don't, whatever your minhag is, you know, different minhagim to do that. Okay, I wish everyone a ksiva chasima tova, good yor, all too. Yeah, he didn't go to Tashma, right.